Good morning, everybody. I'd like to welcome everybody once again to our Easter Sunday service. And I know it's tradition here that I'm supposed to get up and I'm supposed to give a sermon about the resurrection, and that's what you're all expecting. So since you're all expecting it, I'm not going to do that. Because we do that every week as we serve the Lord's Supper, and we celebrate that every single Sunday that we're here. And so instead, I'd like to talk to you briefly this morning about the God who was raised on that day and about what he means to us and the lengths that he'll go to get our attention. And so that's what we're going to talk about this morning. God seems to enjoy doing some unlikely and some outrageous things. And so that's what I'd like to talk about. It's been something that's been percolating in our Wednesday night Bible class that I've been seeing as a theme that had never occurred to me before. And so I just thought I'd share those thoughts with you about some of the things that God likes to do. And so I'd like to talk first about a very strange story. This comes from Ezekiel chapter 37. And what happened was there was a valley, and it was a valley where a major battle had been fought a long time before. And so starting at the beginning of that chapter, it says, the hand of the Lord was on me, and he brought me out by the Spirit of the Lord and set me in the middle of a valley. It was full of bones. He led me back and forth among them. I saw a great many bones on the floor of the valley, bones that were very dry. He asked me, "Son of man, can these bones live?" I said, "Sovereign Lord, you alone know." Then he said to me, "Prophesy to these bones and say to them, 'Dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. This is what the Sovereign Lord says to these bones. I will make breath enter you, and you will come to life. I will attach tendons to you and make flesh come upon you and cover you with skin. I will put breath in you and you will come to life. And then you'll know that I'm the Lord.' So I prophesied as I was commanded. And as I was prophesying, there was a noise, a rattling sound, and the bones came together, bone to bone. I looked and the tendons and flesh appeared on them and skin covered them, but there was no breath in them. Then he said to me, 'Prophesy to the breath. Prophesy, son of man, and say to it, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. Come breathe from the four winds and breathe into these slain that they may live.' So I prophesied as he commanded me, and breath entered them, and they came to life and stood on their feet, a vast army." It's a story we don't hear about too often, but sometimes we think about, as we're hearing the resurrection story, we think about all those people that have died, the people that their bodies were burned up as a result of their death, the ones that were lost in the sea. And if you looked at the pictures of the Titanic, there's no bodies there. There's no skeletons on the Titanic. The seawater has completely dissolved those bodies where they're not there anymore. And so sometimes we wonder, how can God resurrect people that there's no trace of them left? People that lived 5,000 years ago. How is he going to resurrect them? And I think this story kind of shows us that it doesn't matter about the condition of our physical bodies, that just as Jesus was resurrected from the dead after the horrible injuries that was inflicted upon them on a cross, he's able to restore our bodies no matter what. He can pull the very atoms of the earth together and restore the bodies that we had. And I think this is a very dramatic example of how he can do that. And God likes to make an impression. He likes to let his power be known. And this is one of the stories that he does that through. And the next one that I'd like to talk about is one it's one of my favorite stories in the Bible. But it's one that we don't really talk about all that much either. And that's Balaam's donkey. If you remember this story, it's one of the funniest stories in all of the Bible. And so I just have to share it with you today. And it's about a man named Balaam. in the Old Testament. It's recorded in the book of Numbers. And it says, Balaam got up in the morning, saddled his donkey, and went with the Moabite officials. But God was very angry when he went, and the angel of the Lord stood in the road to oppose him. Balaam was riding on his donkey, and his two servants were with him. When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in the road with a drawn sword in his hand, it turned off the road and into a field. Balaam beat it to get it back on the road. Then the angel of the Lord stood in a narrow path through the vineyards with walls on both sides. When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, it pressed close to the wall, crushing Balaam's foot against it. So he beat the donkey again. Then the angel of the Lord moved on ahead and stood in a narrow place where there was no room to turn either to the right or the left. When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, it lay down under Balaam, and he was angry and beat it with his staff. Then the Lord opened the donkey's mouth, and it said to Balaam, "What have I done to you to make you beat me these three times?" This is the donkey talking. That's why I love this story. We think that Shrek's donkey was the first talking donkey, and that wasn't the case. So he says, "What have I done to you to make you beat me three times?" Balaam answered the donkey. He doesn't question the fact that this donkey is talking to him. He just answers him. I always thought they found that surprising. Balaam answered the donkey, "You've made a fool of me. If only I had a sword in my hand, I'd kill you right now." How's he going to kill a talking donkey? The donkey said to Balaam, "Am I not your own donkey, which you've always ridden to this day? Have I been in the habit of doing this to you?" "No," he said. Then the Lord opened Balaam's eyes, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the road with his drawn sword. So he bowed low and fell face down. The angel of the Lord asked him, "Why have you beaten your donkey these three times? I've come here to oppose you because your path is a reckless one before me. The donkey saw me and turned away from me these three times. If it had not turned away, I certainly would have killed you by now, but I would have spared it." So this is just one of those stories that just kind of shows you what God does to get our attention, to let us know that he's there and that he's all powerful. And he will go to any length in order to make that point to us, even to the point of making a donkey talk. So this is not the only stories by any means where God demonstrates his power that he has. In our recent Bible class, we talked about the birth of Isaac. And Isaac had been promised to Abraham ever since Abraham was 76 years old. And Isaac was finally born whenever Abraham was 100 years old and Sarah was 90. And they were wondering the whole time. God had been promising them that he would be a great nation, that his descendants would be numerous, and that they would become what would later become the Hebrew nation. But he just didn't believe him. And the reason why God waited so long was because he didn't want there to be any doubt at all about why Sarah was able to have this child. He wanted to wait until she was 90 for that specific reason. And I know the women are saying, "Well, I wouldn't want to have a baby when I'm 90." But she did, and she considered it an honor. But even though that's mighty late in life to have a baby. But God did it deliberately. He could have had her have the baby whenever she was 30, but he didn't want to. He wanted everyone to know that this was a miraculous birth. And so that was why he waited. He worked in the life of Joseph. Joseph had dreams early on about being a leader and having his family bow down to him, and having lots of people bow down to him. It was obvious he was going to be the king. But he was a boy out watching the sheep that from... from nowhere, I guess, in the world. And if somebody had said, you know, "One day you're going to be leading Egypt," he would be, first of all, why would I be the leader? I'm just out here, you know, watching sheep. And also, Egypt. I'm not Egyptian. How's somebody that's not even from Egypt going to go and lead that country? But he did. And God used kind of a roundabout way to get him to Egypt. But it worked. It was the path that he was able to follow in order to get there. And so So God used him being sold into slavery and becoming a slave and in a household and having him rise to power and go to prison and then leave prison. But all of that led to him becoming the leader of Egypt behind the Pharaoh himself. And once again, God did that to prove his power. So finally, we get back to Jesus, to the birth of Jesus. And this, in and of itself, was amazing, not just because it was a virgin birth, which is usually what we think about it, but once again, God performed his work in the most amazing way possible. There had been prophecies that people had been reading about the Messiah who was coming. And some of these prophecies seemed contradictory. He said in Micah 5:2 that Jesus would be born in Bethlehem. And so that's pretty straightforward. But Hosea 11:1 said he would come out of Egypt. And Isaiah 11:1 said he was going to come from Nazareth. And so people were probably asking themselves, okay, how is somebody going to fulfill all three of these prophecies? That they're going to be born in Bethlehem, but they're from Nazareth, but they're going to come out of Egypt. But in order just to make that point that he is God and that he is powerful and that everything comes from him, he made all of those prophecies come true through his own means. And these are just a few of the unusual things that God did and amazing things that God did. I mean, we haven't even talked about the story where he made an axe head float, where the walls of Jericho fell just because they marched around it and blew trumpets, the parting of the Red Sea, and Jesus' own resurrection that we're here to celebrate today. All of these things were miraculous. They were outrageous, and they were amazing to the people at the time, because God will do what he has to do in order to show his power, and sometimes just to get our attention so that we can know that God is working in our lives. So why does God do all of these outrageous things? I mean, sometimes people accuse God of narcissism, that he's trying to show off, that he wants to draw attention to himself so that people will know that he's all-powerful. And it is true, in a sense, he wants people to know that he's all-powerful. But that's not because of his narcissism. That's because of our need to have somebody like that in our lives that we can call on. Somebody that can help us, that we know that whenever we ask for something, that God has the power to provide it. If we look at all of these stories, we see God's power and we see his handiwork in each of these. And we know that he can do the same things for us. It's not that we need to have talking donkeys or see axe heads floats or part seas for us or anything. But if he can do those things, imagine what he can do in your life. So what has he done in your life? Has God done any unlikely things in your life? Because he will, and he does. You may have experienced God's power at various times in your life. That time when you were out of money and money came from somewhere unexpected. You know, sometimes we have stories like that. And Denise and I always said that God had to butt our heads together because he finally gave up on us finding each other on our own. But you know, that's the kind of thing that God does. He has a plan, and he wants his plan and expects his plan to be carried out. And so he's going to do that. He's going to do whatever it takes in order to make his plan succeed. And he doesn't always take the easy route. In fact, sometimes he specifically seeks out the hard route, because he knows what's best, and he knows what it is that will be the most effective. And so sometimes when we're experiencing that turmoil in our lives, we can know that God's still with us, that he's not doing that to us because it's mean. Sometimes he does things to us and for us just because it's what we need. It's what we need at the time. Sometimes we'll look back on a situation and we'll say, okay, now I understand why I went through that situation. Maybe it was because of the outcome, because it led to something better, because it allowed us to be able to minister to other people and be able to empathize with them and know what it is that they're going through. And so there's always a reason. We sometimes get opportunities through hardships and through things that maybe you wouldn't expect. But anytime there's a change in your life, God is the one who had a hand in it. He sent Denise and I all over the world. But because of those opportunities, being sent to a military congregation overseas, it gave me the opportunity to learn to teach Bible classes and to get up and speak to groups here, something that I was never able to do before. But when we got there, you know, as we were meeting people, it's like, all right, we don't have a preacher. We all take turns. Your turn is at the end of the month. That was kind of the situation. And it's scary at first, but we realized that God has the power to do that for us and to allow us to be able to do the things that he needs us to do. So we know that God has the power to do anything for us. So, do we ask for outrageous things from God? We know that he can do them. He's proved over and over what he can do, from the simple and the mundane, from making a donkey talk to parting the Red Sea and Jesus raising from the dead. He's done all of those things. He's given us those examples of the things that he can do. So what do we ask for? Whenever we realize the amount of power that we've got at our disposal, what do we ask for? You know, for him to find us a parking place when we're running late? What could we ask for? And that's why I had the scripture reading this morning is Matthew 17:20. Jesus says, truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there and it'll move. Nothing will be impossible for you. So just think about that. God's promised that anything that we want to do that's within his plan, anything that he's asked us to do, he's going to give us the power to make it happen. So, James chapter 4, verse 2 through 3 says, you do not have because you do not ask God. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. So sometimes, you know, we'll think, you know, I could do this if only I had this. If only I had this ability. If only I had this talent. If only I had the money to do this, I would go and do it. God has the power to provide any of those things that we want. Sometimes I don't think we ask because we're afraid that he will supply what it is that we ask for. If we say, you know, I would go overseas on a mission trip if only I had the money. But maybe that's an excuse. Maybe we, when that money falls into our lap, suddenly we say, okay, he provided the means. Now I'm scared. I don't want to go and do it. What if something happened to me? What if they don't listen? You know, we've read those stories in the Bible. Sometimes people don't want to go, or they're concerned about things like that, their safety or people not listening. That's the whole story of Jonah, is he didn't want to go. Not because he didn't think they would listen. He didn't want to go because he thought they would listen. And he didn't want them to be saved. He said, those are mean, evil people. I want you to destroy them. I don't want to go and save them. But he went there anyway, and they repented. And that was what he was afraid of. And so then he got all mad because they repented. And he wanted them to be destroyed. So sometimes our thoughts don't match God's thoughts. And sometimes our plans don't match his. But rest assured, he's given us the Great Commission. He's told us to go out and to take the gospel to every creature, to all creation. And so with the amount of power that God has demonstrated to us that he has, and we know that that's what he wants us to do, do you really think he's going to limit your ability to do it? that if you ask for the ability, for the talent, for the money to do something to help with that great commission, do you think God is going to say no after all of this? And so maybe it's time for us to stop making those excuses, to look around and say, you know, we've got this great commission. What could I do? What would be possible for me to do? And what would I need in order to do it? And that tells us what we need to ask for. If we know what we need to be able to do something, then we ask God for it. Matthew 24:14 says, "And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come." This is your opportunity to fulfill a prophecy of the Bible. God has said he's going to wait until the whole world has heard the message. Everybody's had an opportunity to be saved, and then the end will come. So this is your chance to do your part of it, to take the gospel wherever it needs to be taken. And that may be overseas, or that may be to your coworker or to your neighbor. But he wants everybody to have the opportunity to hear the gospel, to hear the good news. Not just that Jesus rose again, which is what we're here to commemorate on this Easter Sunday, but we want to know why. Why did he do that? Why did he save us? And the answer is because he wants us to be saved, and not just us. He wants everybody to be saved. So you may look at that person, at that coworker, and say, they would never accept Christ. I could preach to them, but then they're just going to hate me, and it's not like they're actually going to listen. How do you know? Have you asked God to know the right thing to say, to maybe prick their heart, and to maybe get their attention? You know, have you asked God to help you to figure out how to reach this person that you know is lost, that you can tell by the way they live their life that they're lost? But you don't receive because you don't ask, according to James. And so maybe we should ask. Maybe we should ask that question. Because the gospel is going to be preached to the whole world. God has said that. It's going to happen with or without you. So this is a chance for you to be on the winning team, to be part of that active effort to make it happen. To the people around you, to the people in your Jerusalem, the people that you know that nobody else in here knows. Because we each have that group of friends, that circle of acquaintances, of people that you know, and that you may be the only Christian influence in their life. So this is your chance to help bring about that prophecy, the plan that Jesus has and that he left us with, the chance to carry out for him. So have you done that? Think about your life. What kind of opportunities have you missed? There's been lots in my life that I've missed. Now's a chance to change that, to start thinking about what we can do, what we've got the power to do through God, because he's already demonstrated he can do literally anything. So whatever it takes, we shouldn't limit God's power and say, oh, God wouldn't or couldn't help me do this, because he can. And he's proved it. And that's why we have all of these stories that we read about all the outrageous and amazing and unlikely things that God has done. Because he will do anything it takes in order to see his kingdom succeed. So you've got an opportunity this morning. Tom's going to come forward and he's going to lead us in song. And you've got an opportunity to think about the way you've lived your life and to get help. To get the prayers of the church, to be able to get your life back on the course that God has set for you. If you are watching online, you've got an opportunity to let us know. You can text us. You can give us a call. You can let us know. It can be today. It could be tomorrow. It could be any time. But that's why we're here, is in order to provide you the help that you need. But if you're here and you're not a Christian, if you haven't ever obeyed the gospel, if you haven't ever placed your life in God's hands, you've got an opportunity to do that this morning. You've got an opportunity to become part of that plan that God has, that God is going to make sure succeeds. You've got a chance to become part of that winning team. And so we encourage you to do that. You can come forward, you can discuss it with us, and we can help you to confess his name, to repent of your past sins, and to be baptized into Christ today. So whatever your need is, we encourage you to come forward while we stand and sing this song.